waves get lost in the ocean. 7 billion swimmers, man, I'm going through the motions.
Hi, this is Nancy Herald, and welcome to my show, High Road to Humanity. In every episode, I tell you powerful true stories filled with great wisdom that you can use in your own life as you strive for a higher road to travel. My featured guests will have their own unique stories to tell that enlighten your mind and your soul. So kick back, relax, and learn the secret to success when you take the high road. Hey, it's Nancy Herald, and here we are again today on the High Road to Humanity. And thanks so much for joining us. We have an awesome show in store for you today. But I always like to start the show off with a true story, one that leaves you thinking. So here we go. Sit back and relax, you guys, and I'm going to tell you a story. Here's a wonderful story confirming the presence of angelic beings. My husband and I live on a lake, and we were in need of a new boat. So as we were driving home from shopping one Saturday afternoon, my husband suggested we stop at the local boat shop to see if they had a vessel that fit our needs. So we walked into the shop, and we met the kindest elderly gentleman. His name was Harry. He was the owner and was more than happy to help us. We followed him out into his boatyard to view his inventory. As we talked, my husband said that he had spent many years racing jet boats and thought he and Harry might have crossed paths over the years. As they talked further, Harry said it was possible that they had met since he had been in the marine business for more than 50 years. He proceeded to tell us that he was fortunate to even be alive and speaking with us today. He proceeded to tell us his story. He had gone through a triple bypass some years back, which was successful, and had recovered nicely. Later, he found out that his prescribed medication, an aspirin per day, along with a blood thinner, had been an almost lethal combination for him. But he felt that God must have had more for him to do here on earth. He then asked if we were interested in hearing the rest of the story, and we said, of course. Well, Harry proceeded to tell us that he had been eating dinner with his wife at a restaurant one evening when he was struck by an excruciating pain in his head. He told his wife there was something terribly wrong and that he needed to go to the hospital immediately. She helped him out of the restaurant and to the car. She rushed him to the emergency room. He said that he was in the back seat in the fetal position because the pain was more than he could bear in his head. He remembers being sedated for testing and eventually woke up in the hospital. The doctors explained to Harry that the aspirin and the blood thinners had caused a weakening of the blood vessels in his brain. As a result, dangerous bleeding in his brain had occurred, which was the cause of his severe pain. Now, the doctors explained that the surgery on his brain had been scheduled for the next morning to alleviate the problem. The surgeon was to perform the brain operation was considered to be the best in his field. He was from Australia on a special exchange program here in the United States. Now, this was quite a rare coincidence for such a small town hospital. Harry's wife was exhausted, went home for the night to rest before returning in the morning. So as Harry lay there pondering the surgery early the next morning, a male nurse came to check on him. And he asked if he could sit with him for a while. Harry was still in pain and was anxious about the operation, but he agreed. The nurse spoke to Harry about the Lord, and he asked to pray with him. After their prayer, the man explained that the surgeon was one of the best in his field. He said that Harry should not worry or be fearful, as the operation would go well. As Harry drifted off to sleep that night, he felt at peace. Morning seemed to arrive quickly, and before Harry knew it, he was heading down the hall for brain surgery. He told us he had not been apprehensive and that he was at peace with his wife. He was at peace as his wife kissed him on the cheek. When the operation was over and Harry was in recovery room, the famous surgery from Australia came to let him know that all had gone well. Harry told the surgeon that he had been confident of the surgeon's talents and that the male nurse who had sat with him the night before had assured him of that. The doctor looked at him with a puzzled stare and replied, "We do not have a male nurse on staff at the hospital here, sir." Harry had not been sedated the previous evening, and he knew that the man had prayed with him. When he told the doctor the male nurse had definitely been with him the night before, the doctor just shook his head. After Harry's release from the hospital, he discussed with his wife what had happened to him, and they both agreed that the man that had been sent to assure him that the Lord was with him was an angel. There you have it. I believe in angels, and I think they're out there. And there's so many wonderful stories where you hear about angels. So there you have it. And today we have a wonderful guest. We're going to go right into talking to Lynn B. Robinson. And let me give you a little information about Lynn. Lynn's got a new book out. I'm so excited because this is the kind of stuff Lynn writes about. It's called Loving to the End and On by Lynn B. Robinson. And she's a PhD. And it's a guide to the impossible possible. And Lynn, let's see, she has a distinguished career. She had a distinguished career in marketing, international business, which I think is really cool, at the University of South Alabama, including running her own successful management consulting firm. And you just not believe it. Now she's devoted her life to death. And she didn't think she would be doing this, but, you know, God always has a plan for us. So here we are. And I've read this book, and let me just give you a real quick synopsis. Well, actually, you know, Lynn will give the synopsis, but let me read this really quick. It says, imagine a book of love stories that's actually a book about dying. And so what she's done is she's put together a book, and I'll let her tell you more. I'll quit talking. And Lynn, are you there? Are you with me?
I'm right here.
Oh, Lynn, I'm so happy you're on our show. Tell everybody about this book. I mean, give them a quick synopsis of why you wrote it and what it's about.
Well, I think you've given them a synopsis of what it's about. I won't repeat that. I will tell you how it came about because I think it's really pretty funny. And I guess, you know, it's a story of how maybe God does work in mysterious ways, because I have a friend who's a dean of nursing. Actually, she just retired a few months ago, but she wanted me to teach a course about near-death experiences. As you said, I'm not an NDE-er, but I've always had a place in my heart for them because for some reason, people no longer in physical bodies started talking to me many, many years ago when I was quite young.
It's a little... Can I ask, Lynn, I don't mean to interrupt you, but how old were you when you started to hear people?
Huh. It's hard to say because when I really stopped to think about it, I remember having an imaginary playmate as a child, but I'm not sure now that it was an imaginary, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you're an intuitive and I'm an intuitive and I can remember the same thing. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that they can actually, if they just listen, they can hear their loved ones, right?
Right. And I think probably my most immediate memory was maybe as a teenager.
I see.
With a relative who was no longer living, an older relative. So probably that was then. And then just gradually after that, I was so highly intuitive and got information in how to do things. And especially in some of my management consulting work, when things weren't going right, I would just move into a different space in my mind/brain and allow information to come in and get another path that would work. And so with somebody whispering in my ear or just having insight, it's really hard to know until you get a very specific message, especially one that you're going to give to someone you don't know very well from someone you never knew and find out that the information is all correct and meaningful to that person. And then you, the only way to figure it out is to say, I got direct information from someone no longer in a physical body for someone who is, and just run with it because something happened. And that's as good an explanation as any. But at any rate, back to how it all started, this dean of nursing asked me to teach a course in about near-death experiences. And fast forward, after jumping through a lot of hoops, the vice president to whom she reported finally said, I just can't let her do that because she might talk about talking to dead people.
Oh, my gosh. And I just want to stop you there for a second, because that's one of my questions I wrote down for you as I read your book, you know, because I'm thinking, no, wait a minute. I'm going to tell you, I hear people, too. So I'm intuitive and it does help me in business. And that's how I do coaching and stuff. So I hear it, too, if you tune in. But here's the thing. There's so many people in our society, they don't want to hear about this. And they want to pretend that death isn't going to happen and that none of this stuff is going on. I mean, don't you feel that in our society right now? And do you see a change? That's my biggest question.
I see an opening. I think more people are open to it than were 20 years ago. I'm really kind of excited about that. And I think in some ways, the International Association of Near-Death Studies has helped with that because there's so many physicians and nurses who have had to admit that they themselves have had one or have had patients tell them, I saw you doing X, Y, and Z in the operating room, and the physician's having no, I mean, they say you couldn't, you were dead. Well, no, I saw you doing that. And they're very specific into what instruments they picked up, who was whistling what tune, what instrument may have malfunctioned and they had to bring another one in, all of that sort of thing. So I think that the physicians and nurses who are owning up to their own events have helped open up the word. In fact, there's some groups now with IONS, and I don't really mean to be promoting them, but they're a really good group. They're opening up all over the world now.
Now, what is that group called?
The International Association of Near-Death Studies.
Wonderful.
IANDS is the are the initials.
I think that's fantastic. And if any of our listeners would be, I know our everybody's going to be interested in reading your book, because it's a really wonderful guide if you have, for anybody, because we're all going to die eventually. It's like we don't want to talk about it. It's a big secret, but we are all going to go. And so how can people, you know, what do you suggest that people do if they do have a dying relative? I mean, do they get in touch with an association, read your book? What do you suggest that they do?
Oh, of course I want them to read my book.
Absolutely. It was really good, by the way, too. We'll talk about that, too.
By Lynn B. Robinson. The B is important because there's a Lynn A. Robinson in Boston, Massachusetts, who's highly intuitive, and she's a great gal, too, and she does some business consulting work, but she doesn't write about death and dying. So there's a lot that people can do reading that book, asking others, being open to talking about things that happen in their homes. We can talk about that as we go on, about some of the things that they can observe in their own lives. Clock stopping when somebody dies, that's something that happens all the time, and sometimes they never restart.
Yeah, so, I read that story in your book, and it was, I believe it was a grandfather that had passed. Can you tell us that story? When all the clocks stopped?
Well, that is a very long and complicated story. He actually rose up out of his body and through the roof of the home, and no one in his family believed that that was at all possible. It's totally changed two of the people in his family. I mean, completely. They've done a reverse on what they believe. But that happened. I have another relative who has a clock that stopped about 40 years ago when somebody died.
Check out Nancy's website, nancyyearout.com, to book your first 30-minute coaching session for free to get you on your high road.
It's words you've never heard.
Did you know that besides home and work, Americans spend more time at the mall than anywhere else? There are 50,000 shopping malls in the United States alone. The Mall of America, located between Minneapolis and St. Paul, is the largest in the world, with more than 500 stores. What's a word for a person who is a compulsive shopper? An oniomaniac. Studies have shown that women will buy more if they hear their heels clicking on the floor. So designers often use hard flooring in hallways. Of course, the stores want customers to spend all their coopity-coop. That's another word for money. Well, I gotta run. There's only one more shopping day until tomorrow. My husband said if I don't quit shopping so much, he would leave me. Lord, I'm gonna miss that man.
It's words you never heard.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Words.
We want to thank you so much for listening to High Road to Humanity. This is where Nancy and her guests tell stories that will guide you and enlighten your mind and soul. Now, welcome back to The High Road.
Hey, we're back here, and we are visiting with Lynn B. Robinson, PhD, and she has a wonderful new book out. It's called Loving to the End and On. And Lynn, tell our audience where they can get your book.
Probably the easiest place, to be frank, is at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, both online. Barnes & Noble will order it for you if you want to bring it into their store. I haven't been informed if they have it in store yet. Bookstores are struggling, so it would be good if you helped them out.
Thank you.
You can also order it from the publisher, which is Balboa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We were talking during the break, and I was asking you in your book, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a quick synopsis of this grandfather who was dying and what happens when his, I guess it's his grandson that's sitting next to the bed, isn't that right?
Well, almost the whole family was there with the exception of one daughter who was trying to get back to the United States from Europe. The father had been, grandfather had been quite ill and was lying there. And they realized that his breathing was getting less and less and that death was imminent. This wasn't, his wife had died some years before and the same sort of thing. But she died she died without the excitement of, as they heard his breath slowing, two of the members of the family looked and actually saw what appeared to be him sitting up out of his body and then heading up and out through the ceiling.
And they
were not prepared for that at all. You can call it an aura of energy or whatever you want to call it, but they weren't prepared for that. The ones who did see it felt totally euphoric. And at the time he died, a clock stopped there and in the apartment of one of them in New York City. So there were a couple of different clocks that stopped at the same time. That is not at all unusual. I think I was telling you that I have a relative who has a clock that stopped when a family member died about 40 years ago, and it's never restarted. I can't.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's the same time of death. And her grandchildren love to show it to their friends and tell the story. They just love the story.
Well, and I think your book really helps people because, like we talked earlier, many people don't want to talk about death. People, a lot of society almost makes us afraid of death, and we shouldn't be afraid of death because there is another dimension that we're going to, and this is like clear evidence that, you know, we are going somewhere else. When you see the aura or the energy of somebody coming out of their body going to another dimension, I mean, how can you argue with that?
Well, people do. So.
Isn't that crazy? And you're just like, what?
Oh, they'll tell you it's an illusion or whatever they want to say.
But. They make up something, right? Well, and you also talk a little bit about animals, too, because, you know, all of us have animals that we love. And you say that I think I read a part in your book where a partner had died and maybe he kind of took on the kitty's persona or something like that. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. A younger friend of mine there is a cat who shortly after her husband died and she was very distraught. The cat would get in the bed with her and stretch out. And she realized one night that someone was stroking her hair in the way that her partner had done and opened her eyes enough to realize it was the cat. And the way the cat was stroking her hair was not even easy for the cat to do. The movement itself at the angle was not easy. So she felt very comforted. She felt as though her spouse and both of the spouses are very highly educated people. Sometimes you would think maybe a little resistant to this sort of thought, but she's convinced that it was her husband, and it was so calming to her and so gratifying. And she felt like, you know, he's okay and he's here with me and I can still feel the love. That sort of thing happens a lot, though, not just with animals. The people who awaken with the sense that their loved one is in the bed and then see an indentation in the pillow. Right. Nothing there to indent it, nothing heavy having been put on it, and yet an indentation as though there is someone lying there. Very common phenomenon. Several of my friends have
happened. I've heard that. I want to ask you, you know, and I have heard that. In fact, my sister passed, you know, several years ago, and her son had mentioned that he knew she was sitting at the bottom of her bed, and I get visits from her quite often. So I'm aware of what you're talking about, but I wonder what you think as far as, or if you have any indication, like when somebody passes, you know, they come out of their bodies, they go, we hope, to the light, and What do you think? Do they get a certain amount of time that they get to come and visit us before they move forward? Or do you think they have the ability to come back on a regular basis? Or what's your feeling about that?
I think it differs with every individual. And there certainly is a lot that's been written about that in different cultures across the centuries. My experience is that it differs with the person. A person who's very comfortable with that possibility may show up almost immediately. Someone who's not as comfortable, it may take a while for them to make the transition. I'm not sure. One of the most fun things that I've had happen recently, and I wrote a little article about it, was a friend who tolerated this. Again, this is someone highly educated, you know, a bunch of degrees, also a minister in the Christian faith, could translate the Bible directly from early Greek into English, all of this sort of thing. But I think he had his own experience when he was injured in high school on the football field, and he had a brain injury and couldn't play after that. And his sister has told me since she died that he told his mother he had talked to the angels. Nevertheless, I didn't hear from him right away. And then I had the most fun experience. I also learned after his death that he had been a bird watcher for a university. He would count the birds in his backyard just as part of a bird counting project in migration. And that was just sort of a hobby thing. And I had this bird show up at my window when some painters were here as a front window, and peck, peck, peck until I paid attention and sort of, you know, hit the window. And then the painter and I went into another room across the hall, and the bird followed us. Within a month, the bird hit on windows on all four sides of the house, on different floors of the house, in at least seven different rooms.
Huh.
And it was not a bird I've ever seen in this part of the country. And I looked it up in bird books and could not find it. And the last day that the bird showed up, he brought another bird with him. It looked to be a female. And another friend of ours, a childhood friend, had died. And she's in the book. And her dogs came to her as she was dying. And she named them to her daughters in the hotel room. I mean, in the hospital room, saying, you know, that the dogs were there. So he showed up with this female. And they just kept sort of playing with me that day, tapping at the window. And then I'd go away and I'd come back and they'd tap at the window. And they disappeared. And I am convinced that this was my two friends showing up. One died about a year after the other, and just saying hello. And you know, you're onto something here. Keep having fun with it.
Right. You know, and I think the more people meditate, and I, correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is what's happened to me personally, is the more I've meditated, the more I hear people who have passed in my head.
I
feel like I'm more connected, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the more connected is maybe true. I went through a period of doing a lot of meditation, but not in, well, sometimes in a formal sense, not very much in a formal sense anymore. But I have observed for myself that speaking with people who are no longer in physical bodies sometimes happens in a different portal in my brain. I'm not sure portal's the right word. In fact, I had a young woman who came to our IONS meeting here who had had a near-death experience, and none of her family would tolerate it. They didn't think their religion would tolerate it, and she just knew what she knew. And so she came to our meetings, and we welcomed that possibility for her. But she went to work in a funeral parlor, and that's
wow.
She got, because she was very comfortable there. Death didn't bother her. She knew that that was just death of the physical body, and it didn't bother her until a lot of the souls of those bodies lying in coffins realized that they could talk to her.
Oh.
They began wanting her to deliver messages to their families, and she couldn't get her work done, and she didn't know what to do about it. So I helped her learn how to shut down that antenna or that channel, whichever it is, so that she did not have to receive their messages.
You know, I know exactly what you're talking about because, and I have to confess this, and I don't usually tell too many people, some of my clients I tell, but when I'm in the shower or in the bathtub is when they come to me, and I've gotten now where I say, hey guys, I need to take a shower. You're going to have to get with me after, because it's ridiculous. It's kind of cool, you know, because it's nice to connect with people. The first person I connected with other than my sister was an old boyfriend. And it was interesting because I'm in the shower and he clearly told me he had died. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I got out of the shower and I went to the computer and he had died 8 years previously. Yeah. And I didn't know. And that was the beginning of them coming to me. And I've helped a lot of people go to the light. And that's one question I wanted to bring up to you. You know, I feel like there's people who have gotten stuck that have come to me and said, Nancy, I'm stuck, help me. And I think they find me because they know I am of the light. Do you feel that as well? Have you ever helped somebody pass because they're stuck? Maybe we'll talk about that, you know, a little bit more after the break. But tell me really quick, what do you think about that?
I've had the same thing happen.
Do you get it in the shower like I do?
One was a very poignant situation. It was where a young couple's home was being disturbed and their children were being awakened during the night. Okay. And they called me to see if I could, and their toys were being moved around in their room.
Okay.
And we can talk about that story because it was very poignant. And I was able to help this young girl realize that she was no longer in a physical body and help her go to the light. And I've done that in several instances.
Well, yeah. And I just wonder, like, they're stuck, but how come it's always like, why didn't they go to the light? Where are they stuck? And then, you know, I won't go into how I tell them or how I get them there, but, you know, I get them there to the light and I do tell them that their relatives are waiting for them. And most of the time they do go and I don't have any issues. They are with the Lord. And that's a good thing. So it's wonderful that there's people like you out there who can do this stuff for Lynn, for other people, Lynn. And I do too. I just don't, I don't do it as you do. I do more of a coaching thing for people and I don't talk about it as much. Cause like you, my family members look at me like, are you serious? You talked to who in the shower today?
Yeah, well, unlike you, a lot of people who know that I do this before they have died, and I'm older than you are, so I have a lot of friends who are dying, but I've laughingly said, you know, please come talk to me, but not in the bathroom or the bedroom. And then I adjusted it, and I said, no, I guess the bedroom's okay, because sometimes if I'm really focused on things and I'm really working hard, then nobody can get through to me because I'm in a totally different brain space.
Right.
And or yeah. Communication space or whatever. And it may be that during dream time, when I'm relaxed.
Hey, tell us more about when you come back.
Humanity, but make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, or download directly from Nancy's website, nancyyearout.com, so you never miss an episode of The High Road.
If you're like me, sometimes you have trouble choosing between being a couch potato or going out. Hey, it's a big decision for us scabberlatchers. A scabberlatcher or a ragabash is another word for a lazy person. Well, a couple from California seems to have solved the problem by inventing a motorized sofa. You may think they're just spinning their wheels, but people have spotted the couple cruising down the street on their drivable Davenport in West Los Angeles and Santa Monica. No word yet on the couple's identity, but a man claiming to be a relative said it's all well within the norm for his fun-loving cousin. I don't know if this Chesterfield on wheels is street legal, but either way, I think the police would have to put up quite a chase before they could couch him.
It's Marching Day.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Words.
We want to thank you so much for listening to High Road to Humanity. This is where Nancy and her guests tell stories that will guide you and enlighten your mind and soul. Now, welcome back to The High Road.
And we're back with Lynn B. Robinson, PhD, with her awesome book. You got to read this. Loving to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossible Possible. That's really cool, Lynn. Finish telling the story about the kids and the toys that you were telling before the break.
the kids and the toy.
You said the toys were moving around in their rooms and the parents called you. Yeah.
That was a few kids. At any rate, so the family had asked me to come, I'm trying to make a face, come down to the house, which is a very old area. So it's a very old historic home, dates back early 1800s. And I sensed something in the house, couldn't find anything in particular, and said, let's walk around the yard. And we went out to what had been an old carriage house and was just a storage room. And that's where I picked up the sense of this young girl. And I just stopped and said, y'all go away and just let me be here. And so anyway, so the sensing of this young girl expanded, and she was just adorable. And she was dressed in, you know, clothing of another era. And she had a stuffed doll in her hand. And so I just started talking to her like we were buddies and said, you know, what are you doing? And she said she was waiting for her father. So, yeah. So it turns out her father had gone away. It's quite possible it was the War of 1812 or the war between the states or whatever. Right. So I sent out mentally, however that happens, this call for this child's father, and nobody showed up. And I kept talking to her. And then what was probably a servant, an older woman dressed in, you know, with an apron on and et cetera, showed up, and the girl obviously knew her and mm-hmm. ran over and gave her a hug. And I tried to explain what was going on. And she said, well, I'll take her. So I said to the little girl, will you go? And she said, no, I want to wait for my dad. And I said, well, will you go if she promises to bring you back when you want to come? And the little girl said yes, and the woman promised to do that, and they left, and there was never another problem in that house.
Wow.
So
that's a wonderful thing you did for those people.
Yeah.
And for the little girl.
Oh,
you know?
Girl, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, so those sorts of things do happen.
I love your stories and I love your book, and I had so much fun reading it. And during the break we were talking, and I mentioned you write a little thing about Loretta Lynn and Johnny Cash, and I did not know this story. So would you mind, I'm making you tell all the good stories here, Lynn, but would you mind just telling us a little bit about that?
Well, that happened when I was searching for something else online, and I have a familial interest in country music and songs of that nature. So I was familiar with Loretta Lynn, and when I saw that she was recording something in Johnny Cash's old studio, and he shows up and she speaks to him, and then this is in a blurb you can find somewhere on the internet, and she said, I realized that he'd been dead for a while, and there I was talking to him, and it really disturbed her. But then when I found, so that became a laughing thing, and they moved on from there with the music. But then I found that she, on her property, has other entities that speak, and they, you can find that online too. And if I'd known you were going to ask, I'd have even had a website, a web address.
Oh no, that's fine. I just think it's so interesting. I mean, all of us, and even when you wrote that in the book, it said what Loretta had not believed before, but now she does.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that happens to a lot of people. They become believers.
Well, yeah, and don't you think the more of us that get out there, I think this is so awesome. You know, that's one of the reasons I'm doing this show, High Road to Humanity, is to get the word out about God and get the word out that this is not the end. I mean, I believe we're here to fulfill our destiny. We all are learning while we're here, and then we move on. And it's so nice and refreshing to see a book like this, to where you talk to people and make death not a bad, dark thing. It's actually a cool thing, because people are not people who are ill or older, who are in pain. I mean, once they leave their bodies, they're free. You know, that's how I feel about this.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you talked about that, because that's one of the things that I've realized in having written this book and gotten feedback now from people who are reading it, is that it is so freeing for them. And it's like a weight is lifted off of their shoulders. And, you know, we need to be able to talk about this. We need to make death not something horrible, but death just another step along your path. And but having said that, as I say in the, I think it's in the last chapter, the physical will miss the physical. I mean, there are a couple of my good friends who are mentioned in that book who were supposed to you know, be around till we checked out together, and they've checked out before me. And there are times when I just, it's like, why? Where are you? And yes, I have talked to both of them in various ways since they've left their physical bodies. But I have found that it's not on command. They have their own schedule. And just like when you dial a friend on the telephone here, they may or may not answer depending on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. They may or may not answer.
Right.
You know, so I don't want that to discourage people who try. It just may be that it's not a convenient time, or that the way you are projecting your energy is not a way that they are receiving it, for whatever reason. And just remember that when you call or text or email, I mean, how many times have I had an email go into what I call the great black hole of emails?
Right, me too. We all have, I think.
Yeah, nobody got it, or I didn't get theirs. So the same thing can happen, and don't let that discourage you from continuing to make an effort to be in touch. Be open to hearing from those who love you. If you're shut down, if you believe this is not possible,
then it won't be.
It's not a suit of armor.
Yeah, right. No, I agree with you completely. And when you are open to it, and it's not ooey gooey, it's not weird, it's just part of life. And gosh, I think it's so awesome that we are talking about this and more people are learning, because, you know, people get so sad when someone dies, but they need to be happy and rejoice. A lot of people have the celebration of life when people, instead of having a funeral and it's dark, and they have a celebration. And I think that's awesome, because it's just that they moved on to another dimension and to another part of their existence. And that's what I really believe. I'm wondering if, I love your story so much, you can tell, Holland. I wonder if you tell us the story, because I thought this was really cool, about the lady who was in the nursing home. I think her name was Zelda. Is that right?
Well, that's what's in the book.
Oh, you changed. You're like me. You changed the name to protect
me. Yes, ma'am. Just pretty much demand it, yeah. Unless, you know, you get all sort of legalistic documentation, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yes, the names have been changed. There may be only two names in the whole book that are actual names, and those are of deceased individuals where family members were okay with it, and close enough that I didn't have to get all sorts of written stuff. But there again, there's no last name.
Right.
So, this was a situation where an acquaintance of mine was was employed in a nursing home, and she was on the night shift and went in and saw one of the patients in the nursing home there sitting in the dining room, and it was very late. And so as she passed by, she just sort of stuck her head in the door and said, it's quite late. Would you like me to take you to bed? And she said no. And she named the head nurse, who's, I've forgotten what name I used in the book, has given me permission to be here. So she said, well, okay, I'll check with you later. Goes on down the hall. And as she's checking in, letting people know that she's there for her night shift, she said to the head nurse, I saw Zelda in the lunchroom and offered to take her to her bed, but she says she's not ready, and you said it was okay. And the head nurse looks up at her and says, well, she died this afternoon, and they've taken her body away.
Surprise, surprise. But she was back into the dining area, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe she wasn't ready to go yet.
Well, she just had some thinking to do.
That
so
is
she
so...
sat there and did it. She obviously was quite comfortable there.
That's funny. Now, so you have a lot of people, let me understand this. They will call you if they have, do you do this as a service? I mean, if they call you and they've got a dying friend or a relative, do they call you in for like a hospice situation, or do you have, it sounds like you have a lot of that.
The hospice situation was volunteer. I have not done that in the past year. I'm sure I will do it again. But that was purely on a volunteer basis, where I signed up for what's called 11th hour.
Okay.
And that's primarily for people who either have no relatives or the relatives can't get there and the hospice people don't want that person to be dying alone. Mm-hmm. And so an 11th hour volunteer will go in. I felt like I had to judge whether or not the person welcomed me or not. Sometimes it was a physical thing. I remember walking in a room one time and the oxygen had come out of the patient's nose, which can cause a great deal of discomfort. And there's no point in being uncomfortable while you're dying. The body can be kept comfortable until the spirit leaves, you know?
Right, right.
So I did not think it was my place to even try to put, so I went out and got the nurses to come in and hook the oxygen back up. And shortly thereafter, the phone rang.
Okay.
And it was, I debated whether or not to answer it. And then I thought, well, of course. So I picked it up and it was this woman's sister who lived in another state and was trying to get over to be with her and wanted to inquire about her. And in that instance, I was able to put the phone up to the dying woman's ear and tell the sister you can talk to her, even though you can't get here, and she will probably hear you. We're told that hearing is the last physical sense to go. I'm not sure that people are even hearing physically so much as still hearing out of body. I'm really personally unclear about that. Mm-hmm. But the dying do seem to know. And so the woman, you know, the woman who was trying to get here from a neighboring state had the opportunity to talk. Sometimes I'm there and a family member gets there. And then unless they want me to stay, it's my turn to leave and let the family be there with their loved one. There's a wonderful story that a friend of mine who was a well-known author at one time, and his stepfather was a well-known scientist. And the stepfather was sitting with his dying wife, and she had been in a coma for quite some time, so he was doing most of his work via the computer, and sitting with her, and he would read to her in the afternoons, and he would read to her from some of their favorite books, and he was reading to her from the Tibetan Book of the Dead at one point, and started talking about the Bardo, at which point she, which is a place in between, theology, and she sat up and opened her eyes and said, "Oh, I want to tell you about that. That's where I am."
Oh, my goodness.
And she and she talked to him for 2 or 3 minutes, closed her eyes, laid back down, and she never spoke to him again. She lived a few more days. I was the beneficiary of that story from a loved one. And it really impressed me because the friend who told it to me has been dead for some years now himself.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And
when we come back from the break, I'm hoping you'll talk to us a little bit about anything you've heard about what it's like on the other side. I'm curious. Everybody has their take on it, but I want to know what you've heard about. What is heaven like? What do you think? We'll be back here on the High Road.
Okay.
We'll be right back with the High Road and more. Don't forget to visit Nancy's website, nancyyearout.com, to sign up for her intuitive personal coaching program or to book a psychic reading. Kids from Oklahoma, man, we don't waste it. I'm just trying to paint the picture for me. Close your eyes and imagine living your life without limits. Where would you go? Who would you meet? What would you do? During an Uncover Your Hidden Genius session, you will discover what's keeping you from living your life with purpose, passion, and fulfillment of your potential. You'll get a clear vision of the steps you need to take to uncover your hidden genius so that you can live a life without limits. Sessions can be done over the phone, Skype, or in person. Find out more at www.joycebufordempowers.com or by calling 903-287-0747.
It's Margin Denver.
Big girls don't cry, right? According to a recent Wall Street Journal article by Dennis Nishi, there's a stigma attached to turning on the waterworks at the office. 61% of men who reported crying at work cited personal reasons, an illness in the family, the death of a pet is the catalyst, while 58% of women said it was something that happened at work, being unfairly blamed or criticized. Men are like mascara. They run at the first sign of hubba-boo. That's another word for crying. What's the word for the fear of intense emotion? Zealophobia. Women may have a better excuse for crying than men, as females have higher levels of prolactin, which encourages the production of tears, making it easier to be known as a lachrymist, or someone who cries at the drop of a hat.
It's words you never heard.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Word.
We want to thank you so much for listening to High Road to Humanity. This is where Nancy and her guests tell stories that will guide you and enlighten your mind and soul. Now, welcome back to the High Road.
Hey, it's Nancy Earle, and we are back with the High Road to Humanity. And we're talking to Lynn B. Robinson, PhD, today. And she has a wonderful book out called Loving to the End and On. And really quickly, let me mention, because I don't promote myself as much as I probably should, but if you guys are interested in coaching, I do intuitive coaching. I have some spots left open. You're welcome to go to my website, Nancy Earle. NancyYearout.com, or you can email me at NancyYearout@gmail.com if you're interested in me speaking to your church or your group. I do have a publicist. You can see her information on my website as well. But now that we're back, I had asked Lynn before the break, hey, what do you know about heaven? What do you know about the other side? So, Lynn, what do you know?
I know that it is beautiful and welcoming. I also know that it's more open than I hear some people talk about. For instance, one of the things that I think I wrote about in my first book had to do with being with my mother several years after she had died. But she came to get me, and I went flying with her. I mean, I wasn't in my body. She wasn't in her body. And the experience of moving in any way that one wanted and soaring, I mean, feeling as though I was a bird, you know, but I knew I wasn't. This was my spiritual body with my mother. We were twisting and turning and going into just incredible space with incredible beauty that isn't descriptive in earth language. And that was a fabulous thing. And I also have to say that I don't know how long it was. It was enough time for my body to be cramped, to express itself as being cramped, because somebody tapped me on the shoulder, a friend who was there meditating also, and said, Lynn, we need to leave. And I popped back into my body and realized that it was very cramped and there were tears rolling down my face. There were tears of joy from knowing that I had been with my mother, and the just luscious experience.
How wonderful for you that you had that experience and that you can share it with other people.
Yeah, so that's one. And then there's a chapter about a friend in the book who didn't believe in any of this, but he'd been dead about 8 or 9 years when he came back in what I call dream time and took me to what I also call metaphysical night school, meaning he just said, come on, you got to go with me. And with him, it was as though I was in school. And I've also experienced this with people talking about their experiences out of body after they've died. Mm-hmm. Where you can get instruction for a number of things. You can also encounter information about your life and the life of others. The thing that gets to me the most, using the same term I used a few minutes ago, is just sense of limitlessness. Mm-hmm. When you're inside your body, especially, you know, if you've heard it or you've been in one position too long, it feels sometimes kind of creaky and tight.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd like to shake that off. But
right.
There's none of that.
So you feel free and there's no time, right?
That works for me, too. Yeah.
Right. We're never late. Well, I am so excited that you came on the High Road today to tell us all these different things, because I just want people to change. I guess I want the mindset to change. I want people to be more open. And even if they're not religious per se, you know, there is a higher power, and it gives people hope, you know, that maybe there is something after this, and maybe we are here learning. And then when we go on, we take what we've learned with us and evolve. That's what I believe. What do you think about that, Lynn?
Oh, I think that the expansiveness is beyond our comprehension inside of this physical body. You almost have to be able to leave it to know how gorgeous, big, full, ongoing, and even so, even in that sense, we're still just a speck of God.
Yeah. Will you tell us, I want to hear your favorite, what's your favorite story about somebody who's come back that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, my favorite.
I know you have a lot of them, but
yeah.
What's your favorite one?
You really have put me on the spot with that one. I don't know that I really do have a favorite. One that I haven't talked about now that I was so glad about is when my friend in the first chapter, who was not supposed to die, when her daughter called to say that her daughter was engaged, and my friend came back to talk about that. I was just so excited because I could pass her messages on to her daughter, who had been named for me when she was born. And so that just felt really good, knowing that the generational conversation was continued.
Right. So what happens for you is you're saying you get a lot, and I read this in your book, and I'm sure our audience, once they pick up your book and read it, they'll realize too. But what happens is you get these messages, and then you contact the loved ones to deliver that message to them. And that's always nice because it eases their mind and lets them know that there is still communication. So my question too is, have you ever had somebody who was not open to that and said, I don't believe you, or I don't want to hear this? Because I've had that happen, not to myself, but I have a friend who is an intuitive and had that happen where they just didn't believe her and said, no, you're nuts, you know? So are people always open or?
No, my friends, when it's a friend, are kind enough to listen and say, okay, Lynn, you're doing your thing. That's fine. And just sort of laugh. And that's okay. Because I think we all have to have our own space to come to awareness when and how we want to do that. There are some people I don't tell about it because I know that it makes them uncomfortable. And that's not my thing in life, to make somebody else uncomfortable.
I agree.
If I can find a way to sneak something in or to change the story and just say, I know you must remember so-and-so, such and such about a loved one. And they might look at me like, how do you know that? But they don't say it, you know,
okay.
So I can do that.
So if you're a psychic, so do you do any kind of psychic readings for people, or do you do anything like that? Or do you just deal with the,
on a professional basis, no, but I do have people call to get me to help them find things.
Okay.
I've been successful in that. And I do have people sometimes say, you know, will you try to get in touch with so-and-so for me? And especially for friends, I do that. And then sometimes, as you know, and you've talked about, it happens spontaneously. And then I have to make the decision, do I call the person or not? I will run into somebody when I have gotten a message. So the person's known ahead of time, that the person no longer in physical body is known ahead of time that I'm going to see somebody, you know, how did they
know?
And then I'll say, you know, I had the most remarkable thing happen. I wonder if there's anything about this that might be at all real. And so I express it in terms that, in a way that I try not to make the other person uncomfortable.
Okay.
I think that's very important. I'm hopeful that people will be open, but they aren't always, and they have their own reasons. And I don't want to play God.
Right. But you do help. I always say we're God's helpers. And, you know, I read my story in the beginning about angels, and that is a true story that was told to me. And I believe that we are God's helpers, as well as the angels are God's helpers that come around. And how do you feel about angels? We touched on it a little bit, but tell me your thoughts.
Well, I believe that they're there. I believe that they get in touch with us. I believe that some angels have had experiences in physical bodies and some have not.
Right.
And I also believe that you see them in different dimensions. Some have appeared to me, so I can only truly speak of my own experience, as being quite large. Others maybe smaller, and of course in the literature about angels, they take on different terminology depending on what religious tradition or philosophical tradition you happen to be involved in. So I don't give them names, but they do come in different shapes and sizes.
Right.
And they have different levels of power. Power may not be the strength might be a better word.
Mm-hmm.
A different ability. You know how when you were a child, there were certain laps that you wanted to sit in? Because I'm thinking of one mother in particular. She had the softest lap.
That's awesome.
You know, if you got a bee sting or
yeah.
Oh, when you were there were a bunch of mothers around, that might be the lap that you wanted to get in.
Yeah.
The other hand, if you were trying to learn to do some physical sport and you needed support, you might go to the strongest dad or the best coordinated dad or mother, depending on the sport or the event. And so you sought different energies. And I think that's true with angels also. Have you had that experience?
Yes, I have. Archangel Michael is my favorite, and he's around me, and I call on him quite often, and I write about him in my book, Wake Up, the Universe is Speaking to You, because he's been around several times. He's helped me not get into an accident, car accident, and there's been several different times where I'll say, I need your help, and they are there. And again, it's what you said earlier, you have to believe. And I believe, and I know they're around me. And I believe we all have a guardian angel, too, that watches over us.
Okay, so you just reminded me of something I want to give to your listeners, because it's an expression. I don't know where I learned it. Somebody probably gave it to me. That goes, just for a moment, suspend your disbelief.
For
those of your listeners who are dubious that this is possible, but you might want to experience an angel or call for help from someone no longer in a physical body, someone who knows something that will help you and you know how much they knew, just for a moment, suspend your disbelief and ask or believe that you can hear, feel, smell, experience.
Wow, what good advice, Lynn. That's fantastic. Hey, listen, we got about 30 seconds left before we're out of here. But Lynn, I want to thank you so much for being on the High Road today. And you have, gosh, you've enlightened so many people. And next week, we're going to have a new guest. His name is Dean Sluter, and he is going to tell us about his new book, Fearless, Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. So that's next week. We'll see you on the High Road. Trying to paint the picture for me, something I could give a damn about in maybe 40 years, and I've been ready and willing and able to edit the story, cause there's so many people here to be so damn lonely. Hey you guys, join me next week on the High Road for more stories filled with wisdom, love, and hope for our future. Have a fabulous week, and know when you stay on the High Road, you make it to your destination. Visit my website at nancyyearout.com, where you can sign up for my intuitive life coaching or a psychic reading. If you have any questions, please email me at nancyyearout@gmail.com. That's nancyyearout@gmail.com. This is Nancy Yearout, lighting the way to your high road to success. Right now, I'm switching to a new lane. Foot to the floor, man, searching for the real thing. Meet somebody else, sometimes ain't no shame. Head to the clouds, ain't. It's like, can I get a connection?